Welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 9. I am all out of sorts today, as I have been recently, I suppose. I had a really busy day, but I am joined by a brand new co-host who you may have heard on the fan feedback episode, and that is Mike Weathers. How are you, Mike?
Not too bad, Rob. Thanks for asking.
Excellent. The reason I'm all out of sorts is because I just started a brand new job today, and I've said before on the show that I'm a teacher. I'm not going to get into the specifics of where I'm working now because there is a certain confidentiality that goes along with being that and not speaking about the students and all that stuff. So I'll just say I'm back to teaching full-time as of today, and I'm very excited about that. And the result of that might be a little less focus on the site and the show. I wanted to do this originally as a every other week show, and it might have to go to that in the future because of the amount of work that I have on my plate now, but I don't know. So I'm against all odds. We're attempting to put one out this week anyway, as busy as I am.
Work gets in the way of everything.
I know, right? If this was a full-time job, then I would be more than happy to do, like, every day one of these. But it is what it is. We have to make our money somehow.
I liked you better when you were a ballet dancer.
I was very nimble. You have to admit that.
Yes, Twinkle Toes Rob.
That's right. Also, I don't know if the audience can pick up on it or not. There's a little more echo maybe in my voice this week, as not only do I have a new job, but I also moved. I no longer live in my old apartment. I now am I'm even more of the stereotypical geek, as I'm recording this from my parents' basement. Yes, I am back living at home in an attempt to save up money and finally buy a house. So it's a necessary evil for where I am right now, but it does make me fit into the geek category a little bit more from recording this in my parents' basement.
Now you're authentic.
I am. That's right. I can say I'm that much more of a geek, and it's one of those things I don't know if you want to say too proudly, but I can say it.
I'm just going to laugh. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. So let's jump right in. And I'm going to ask you what you are geeking out over this week, Mike.
Yay!
Well, what I am... Don't call me Mike. You can call me whatever.
I'm sorry. You know, I should be calling you Weathers. Mike sounds
weird.
Yeah,
that's fine. Or Weatherman.
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 The man behind the clouds.
I am geeking out about two things. As a fan of movies...
Yes.
I particularly love it when a movie's based in the city of Boston.
Okay.
So, with that being said, the movie The Town that's coming out.
Yes.
I am geeking over and over and over again. I'm particularly excited just to see Ben Affleck back on the silver screen there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little scared at the same time because, as you know, when you watch movies that are based in Boston, you know, the accents that these actors try to put on
yeah,
are just always terrible.
Well, fortunately, Affleck's actually from the area, so...
But I don't know if you've noticed, like, ever since, you know, Good Will Hunting, you know, he kind of has lost the accent a little bit.
He has.
And sometimes I think he overdoes it, you know, dropping the ahs, you know?
It's true. The movie does look really good. The one thing that I was a little irked by is that the trailer kind of gives away the entire movie.
Yeah, it kind of did, didn't it? Unless they're just going to pull the rug from underneath us and do a complete and total 180.
Possible.
Very possible. And I guess it's done by the same people that did The Departed.
Oh, okay.
I think. I thought I saw something. It's probably like the caterer that did The Departed or something. But they figured they would try to tie it in.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm very excited. It's got Ben Affleck. It's got the guy from The Hurt Locker.
Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, that's it. And should be exciting. Quick story. One of my friends that, or a couple of my friends that I went to Bridgewater with, was at a Red Sox game, and apparently Ben Affleck was there with his film crew filming some scenes from Fenway for the movie.
Oh, so no kidding.
They got their picture taken with him, and possibly, unless they get, you know, thrown on the cutting floor,
yep,
they may be in the movie.
Very cool.
So I thought that was pretty freaking cool.
I don't know when it's coming out yet because I haven't checked, but I, 17th. What's that?
I think it's the 17th.
Yeah, the town is. I was actually transitioning a little bit.
I
no, that's all right.
Good.
just based on what you said about like being in the crowd for a movie and everything, I didn't get photos with the stars or anything, but a little while back, over a year at this point, my brother and I went up to the Songus Arena in Lowell, and we were extras in the crowd for a couple of the boxing scenes in the upcoming Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale movie, The Fighter.
Oh, that sounds sick.
Yeah, so that was really cool to see, and I'm looking forward to seeing when it comes out. There's a good chance you're really not going to recognize any faces in the crowd, and we're just pure background noise visually, but it was a long, drawn-out day by the end of it, but it was exciting to do anyway, for like a one-time thing.
Oh, for a second there, you had me worried. I thought you were going to say that you were in the crowd for like the next Twilight movie or something.
No, thank you. I'm all set with that one.
You'd make a good Cullen.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll stop. The other thing that I'm geeking out about is DJ Hero 2.
Are ya?
Yes. Now, I don't know if you're familiar or if you've ever seen or played the first one.
I don't know how popular it ended up being. I did see something last week where it dropped down to like $40 already.
Yeah, it didn't come off as well. I think it's just because people are just done with, you know, music games and having to buy peripheral after peripheral.
Right.
But when it came out, I was so geeked out about it that, you know, I just went in my pants when it came out. So, yeah. The second one's got a better track listing. I looked it over the other day on IGN, and it just looks really, really sick. Now, if you've never played the game, it's kind of tough to describe, but it's really cool. It makes you feel like you're a DJ even for like 5 or 10 minutes when you're playing it.
I can see how that would be fun for that particular crowd. I can't say I ever honestly wanted to be a DJ, so maybe that's why it doesn't appeal to me. I'm much more drawn to being a rock star.
Oh, yeah.
But if it's a good game, then hey, it's a good game.
Oh, yeah. It for me, I enjoy it. I enjoyed it.
Sweet. Yeah.
So that's my geek outs.
Sweet. I actually don't have a geek out this week. I'm geek outless. I would say Scott Pilgrim vs. the World again, but I said that last week, and the only reason I'm geeking out over again hardcore is because I saw it again last night in preparation for our segment later on where we step into the spoiler room once again. I love the spoiler room. It's a little damp and creepy, but I do love it in there.
And musty now because you're in the basement?
That's right. But now it fits right in.
There you go.
We had to take out that whole... It was... Moving the spoiler room was the biggest problem with the move. Like, lifting that thing out of the ground and really hauling it miles away.
Yeah, how's your back?
It's not well. I'll tell you that. Not well at all.
Can we call it the boiler spoiler room?
The boiler spoiler room? Why? Because it's in the basement now?
Yeah.
Lame.
Whatever. Guess my grits.
So what are you freaking out over this week?
Oh, freak out!
You know, I am freaking out I've seen the trailers for it, and I don't know if I'm going to end up seeing it, but Hell by M. Night.
Hell by M. Night. Do you mean Devil?
Devil, that's it.
Devil.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you freaking out over it?
I don't know. It's just because it's M. Night.
He is carrying a bit of a reputation these days. The two times I saw the trailer played inside of a theater, it was followed by laughter.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that, because when I went and saw a movie as well, that was the same reaction that I got. People were like really into it. They're like, you know, from the, you know, the minds that brought you this
right,
or whatever. And then when they said like M. Night, everybody was just like, oh.
Yeah. He's got such a stigma attached to him now, I guess, with all those recent bombs. And you really can't make a whole reputation on being a director that just puts crazy twists into movies.
Yeah. I mean, and most of it's always like political or whatever.
Right. But. Well, the one saving grace for this movie, perhaps, is the fact that it's from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, and it's not directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So maybe there's some redeeming quality. I'm not sure, but I'm just reaching here.
So you're saying there's hope.
I am. I think it's an interesting concept, but it's not one that's going to get me to go to the theater. I'll watch it on DVD.
Well, you know what's messed up, Rob, and borderline fucked up, because it's all of his movies have great concepts. It's just he just tries to put too much of his touches on it.
That's very true.
You know, I would almost like to see him like co-direct a movie with somebody.
I think he has a very creative mind, but at some point he goes too far and someone needs to be there to just slap him in the face.
Yeah, exactly. You know, almost like, you know, how Robert Rodriguez and your favorite director ever, Quentin Tarantino. I think M. Night needs to find a partner director.
I agree. Who might that partner be? Thoughts?
That's a good freaking question.
Who could balance out that wackiness?
You know what's weird? The first name that came to mind was Rob Zombie. How crazy is that?
That's wacky plus wacky, but
oh yeah.
What if we had like a crossover between M. Night Shyamalan, like Roland Emmerich, and it's a massive world disaster twist movie?
Yeah, there you go. Or, you know, maybe put him with what are the Coen brothers.
Give him a comedic, well, if he's getting laughs already just from his name in a trailer, you might as well give him some comedy elements.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet, I love it.
There we have it. The Coen brothers and M. Night.
Devil in beer ball. Wait, what am I saying? Devil in bell bottoms. That's what I was going to try and say. Yeah. Beer. I was about to say beer bottoms, but that I don't know what beer bottoms are. I don't know why that came out of my mind.
I don't know. Sounds like you might have a new design for pants or something.
Sounds horrible. My freak out this week, I actually had two, but I got the benefit of crossing one off because it was recently debunked, thank God. There was a rumor going around that a Back to the Future reboot was in the works, which first made me shudder. The second part of the report is that they were looking for Justin Bieber to star in it.
Oh, I'm going to see it. As long as he's dancing throughout like each decade, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I was hardcore freaking out about it. But 2 days ago, it was recently debunked that not only will Bieber not be starring in a Back to the Future reboot, but there is no planned Back to the Future reboot right now. So that's good. I don't want to see either of those things happen. My other freak out, however, is something I talked about on Twitter, and I told the fans I would. My the Geek Generation Twitter account was suspended for a few days. And I know you're an active Twitter user as well, so you'll be able to appreciate this. I use Twitter as pretty much a marketing tool. Well, mm-hmm. I use my Geek Generation account as a marketing tool. I use my personal account to just hound celebrities to talk to me. But
what's wrong with that?
Nothing at all. I don't know. That's That's totally normal behavior to me. The Geek Generation account, since I use it for marketing, I had the episode when the first time we stepped into the spoiler room and talked about Inception. And I decided I was going to leave a column on TweetDeck where I was searching for Inception, the tag, the hashtag. So I didn't even send the link to everybody. If someone came up on that list that said, really confused about Inception, or what was your take on the end of Inception, then I sent them a tweet and it said, perhaps you'd be interested in our discussion of it. And I sent them a link. So I thought I was not only promoting the show, but doing people a service that they were asking for it. So why not send it to them? I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. Twitter came back at me and said I violated the terms of service by sending out a repeat tweet. Hey, that's a fun new term. A repeat tweet to a mass amount of people on a trending topic. So if you pick something that's popular and you send out a link to those people that are talking about that popular thing, then you're violating the terms of service, which seems stupid to me because isn't that what Twitter's for?
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the terms of service for Twitter being that long and complex. But, I mean, the way that you just explained that situation to me is, yeah, it counteracts what Twitter's all about.
Right. And it's not like I was spamming. These people were asking for the information that I was providing. And a lot of people responded back and said they were thankful for the link. So everybody's winning in that scenario. And if someone really doesn't want to listen to it, it's one tweet and they just ignore it. So I don't know what is up Twitter's ass about it.
I think you should fight Twitter and bring it down.
I should, but I mean, my account's back open and I really felt cut off and just almost neutered when they suspended my account. I was no.
They cut your Twitter off?
They did. They chopped me in Twitter. But it's such a useful way to get out the information. Like all the articles that get posted on the site go right out to Twitter, all the links, and that's how a lot of people are made aware of updated content on the site. So to have that taken away for something so stupid, but it's back now, so I'm not going to complain too much. I fought it and they said, okay, just don't be a jerk anymore.
Oh, dude, that's just crazy, man.
Yeah.
To regulate Twitter is just like trying to regulate the internet, pretty much.
I don't know. I guarantee you like half the people on Twitter are spammers anyway. And how long have you been on it right now? Probably
a year or so.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat. And how many spam messages have you really gotten in a year?
Not too. Spam messages or spam followers?
Spam messages. Followers don't bother me because who cares?
Yeah, none.
See, I mean, I've gotten like one, maybe two. It's not that. I mean, maybe you could argue that it's because it is that way because Twitter regulates their people in the terms of service so stringently, but come on. I don't know.
Yeah, there must be some sort of like backdoor.
If they're going to cut off the Twitter, then you might as well go in the back door. Blah, 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 blah.
There must be some like backdoor voodoo that all these hackers can do. And maybe there's a reason why that's the reason why they're focusing only on popular trends.
Probably. But I mean, I couldn't believe Inception was still trending, honestly. I think it was a good month into the film's release at that point.
Well, I'm sure a lot of it, or some of it, might be overseas. You know,
that's true.
They're always late to get stuff.
International markets and whatnot. Yeah, that's true, I guess. I don't know. But did you have anything else you were freaking out over?
I had something, but I can't remember what it was. But I guess another day, another time.
It couldn't have been that important then. All right. Well, in that case, it's game time.
Oh, game on, bitches.
Game on. And I know you are a veteran of the top three as you got to play. I think the first person ever to do back-to-back top three. Oh, wait, no, there was one other when we did casting the role of Flash and Wonder Woman. But on fan feedback, you were very lucky enough to have some back-to-back top three-age.
I feel honored.
As you should. So we're going to go right now. What?
Just don't cut my Twitter off.
Only if you lose this game. Now the pressure's really on.
Man.
So let's play top three.
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1.
All right, your category. Now, I'll tell the fans one more time that Mr. Weathers and I go way the hell back, like to third grade. So we spent a lot of time together in elementary school playing all sorts of old school consoles. And I know that Weathers is a huge connoisseur of all the old school games. So we're going to lay it out on the line right here. And I'm going to ask you what your top three old school NES games are.
Wow. Old school NES games.
Oh, yeah. We're going strictly to one console because, frankly, it's the only one I had at the time. But
okay,
they had such a wonderful catalog.
Well, here we go. I'm going to have two lists.
Two lists?
Yes. I'm going to have...
Are you violating top three rules?
Yes, I am.
Oh, man.
My Twitter's gone. It's being cut off.
I'm cutting off one of the Twitters now, and if this goes any further, the other one's coming off too.
No, I'm just going to go with cult classics versus obscure classics.
You really can't narrow it down to just three?
I can, but, I mean, everybody's going to come up with, you know, like, for my cult classics, you got Contra.
Yep.
You've got Metroid.
Yep.
And my third cult classic would probably have to be, I mean, you can't go wrong with Zelda.
Okay, so those are classics, but what are your top three? Would those be the top three and then the obscure or additional ones? Or
I think the obscure would be like ones that people would be like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
All right, I'll let it slide for now. That's okay.
All right, cool, cool.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm putting the scissors away, all right?
All right, thank you. No, my one obscure classic would have to be Track and Field.
Good one. Now, did you do the trick?
From time to time.
I wonder if people know what the trick is are listening.
Yeah. Well, define the trick for me. Make sure that we're talking about the same
thing. Okay, this is what we did. And I don't know why we chose this as our implement. Maybe it was the rounded end. You had to find something to rub over the A and B buttons so that alternate
like
them quick. Yeah, you used a battery?
Yeah.
We started doing this at my cousin's house, and we took like a deodorant stick because it had that rounded plastic top, and we rubbed that over the top over the A and B to make ourselves like haul ass in the sprints.
Yeah, I was naturally gifted at that game, so...
Oh, sure. It's the extra muscle in the finger, right?
Yeah. Me being a black person, I got fast twitch muscles.
There you go. Why? Are you referring to the same trick, or is this something I need to be educated on?
No. We were on the same page.
Okay. All right. So Track and Field.
Track and Field. You know, I hate saying another sport game, but Double Dribble.
Amazing game. Loved it.
And, wow, what would my third game be? Probably Double Dragon.
The first, I imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
You gotta love... See, that's what they need more of these days. They need more side-scrolling, two-person beat-em-ups.
Yeah. I can't even remember the last side-scrolling fight game that's been on a next-gen console.
I downloaded one a couple weeks ago.
What was it?
Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the video game.
You know what? I think you need to add another section to your show called, like, Man Crush.
Scott Pilgrim is not a man crush. A, because he's played by Michael Cera. And, it's not a man crush. It's a huge identity crisis. And we'll get to that when we get to the spoiler room. I'll explain why I'm so obsessed with this character all of a sudden.
Fair enough.
All right, so to summarize, we had the cult classics were Contra, Metroid, and
Zelda.
And the obscure were Track and Field, Double Dribble, and Double Dragon. So you're going double on the doubles.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anything with double, I'm all about.
Double bubble? Or double, wait, bubble, bubble bobble. That's
it
what that was.
It was bubble bobble. Yeah. I almost said the same thing, but I was like,
No, that was bubble gum.
Yeah.
It was that hard-ass bubble gum you would find in, like, Joe Blow.
Yes. Or a pack of Fleer baseball cards.
Dude, I'm having some weird flashbacks right now. We need to get out of this nostalgia trip.
Looks like we're doing our own segment of Back to the Future, huh?
I know, right? A whole throwback episode of the Geek Generation. Okay.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
That does sound like a really good idea, but I don't know if, you know what? We might need to record our voices and throw a filter over it so we sound a little more high-pitched, and then we'll pretend like we're that age again.
Yeah, or either that or we'll have to, like, use catchphrases that were popular back in the day.
Cowabunga!
Cowabunga!
All right, well, with that, it is a good time to wrap up part one of the show. So we're going to take a quick commercial break right now, and we will be right back.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd.
Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
Hello, listeners. Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Well, then I have good news for you, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You have spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine. We are back, and it's time to go right into listener emails. The poll question last week asked, who is your favorite original movie villain? We threw a few stipulations out there that they couldn't be from comic books, they couldn't be from TV adaptations. If they were from books, that's okay, because so many movies do come from books anyway, so that's just the way that is. So let's take a look at what we got for responses. First email comes in from G1. He said, good episode, very informative. I feel your pain with asking out the ladies, but alas, I have nothing helpful to tell you. So you listened to episode 8, right?
Yeah. That was kind of brutal.
Yeah, that was, I feel weird sometimes when I put out stories like that, because I know I'm just going to get ripped on, especially by my friends, but.
You know what? Everybody's been there, though, you know?
It's so true.
You're going to get razzed on every once in a while for it.
Yeah.
As long as you live on to tell the next story, you're good to go.
All right, that's a good point. He goes on to say, favorite original movie villain, not including Darth Hannibal and The Mist, really, would be Kaiser Soze from The Usual Suspects. Villains don't get much cooler than that. Sorry, I can't write much at this moment. Thought I'd mention also that the Image Comics app came out this week. Now, if only Dark Horse would get off their asses. I'm assuming the Image Comics app is a thing for iPhone to read Image Comics. Or iPad, maybe.
You know what? Every time I hear about Image Comics, you know who it reminds me of?
Brian Burns.
Yep.
Hardcore biggest Image Comics fan ever during elementary school times.
Big time.
Loved it. I remember...
Go ahead.
I remember me and him used to just draw comic books all the time and try and come up with our own unique comic book company, like, logos and everything.
Oh, yeah. And I also remember, like, I think I still have my Image Comics that he turned me on to, like, Supreme, Spawn,
dude,
Savage Dragon.
While I was talking about old memories, I'm going off on a tangent here, but whatever. I was going through, when I was moving all my stuff from one place to the other, my parents keep these large, like, Tupperware bins. They're huge, that we call our memory boxes, and it has tons of stuff in there. And there was, like, this chewed up piece of paper, and it was from elementary school, and I looked at it, and it said, Prudent News. And I don't know what grade it was, but it was myself, you, Kevin Shea, Brian Burns, Aaron Miles, all did, like, a classroom newspaper, and I still have it.
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
Yeah, it's like all chewed up on the ends or something from, I don't know, like bugs or whatever, but, and it's fading because it's so old, but I should totally scan it and like throw it up on the internet or something.
Oh yeah, please do.
The stories are ridiculous. They're like so dumb and, but it's like, I think one of them's like, Mike Weathers won his basketball game this week. Like,
the end.
Awesome story. All right, back to the emails. Michael Volpe writes in, Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th series. Who doesn't love an unstoppable monster?
Yeah.
That's about it there.
So, that's it.
Oh, no, that was all the two-line email that I got.
Gotcha. That's funny. His name is Michael Volpe. I have a good friend. You know Tom Glenn, right?
Yeah.
His cousin we hang out with, his name is Michael Volpe as well.
Oh, that's funny because this Michael Volpe is my tag team partner in wrestling. So.
Really?
Yeah.
That didn't sound really gay.
Hey. All right.
I'm just putting it out there.
Well, if we're going to talk about man crushes and Scott Pilgrim, I might as well gay it up a little bit more and talk about pro wrestling and having partners and whatnot, right?
Yeah, especially tag team partners.
Yeah. All right.
Anyways.
All right. The last email, this is a lengthy one, and it's a first-time writer. Hector, who is co-host of the infamous podcast Dangerous Memories with a mutual co-host here, Todd Tiuli, writes, Dearest Rob, I feel honored. Going through tons of movie villains to find a favorite was harder for me than a lot of questions I've ever been asked, ever. I tried to stay away from horror films for you, Rob, but I couldn't. Horror films bring the most iconic villains to ever grace the screen, and the list is especially high when you take out comic book baddies. The one film that I rented as a child more than any other movie is A Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, when I saw this question, I wanted to say Darth Vader, but truthfully, Freddy Krueger is what hit harder for me. I think I grew up in a time when all the sequels were coming out to VHS and I rented one after another. There are elements about each film that strengthen Freddy as a monster. Despite its many flaws, I think Freddy is the most terrifying in Nightmare 2, Freddy's Revenge, with his bright red eyes and creepy deep voice. I don't know if he's trying to say something there. What makes him my absolute favorite among the rest is that I love the idea of someone terrorizing you in your dreams. We are most vulnerable in our sleep, more than showers for Psycho and water for Jaws, and the fact that someone can enter your dreams and kill you in your sleep is truly terrifying. I can't think of anyone better for my personal favorite villain, with Vader and the Terminator coming in second and third respectively, and I'm fairly certain it will stay that way. Although, the Wheelers from Return to Oz are up there too. They are fucking scary. Oh, and Saddam Hussein in Hot Shots Part 2 is one of the best. Okay, enough rambling. There's no end to my love for movie villainy, but there is an end to this response, like right now. Except there's not, because there's a PS right here.
You lied to us.
I know. PS, it's true. Girls are easily creeped out by strangers, unlike what the movies tell us, and she was probably just embarrassed more than anything. Or maybe she doesn't want you to know she's really a secret agent in disguise. You should have broken her legs and made her talk. Classic spy identification. Oh well, but don't beat yourself up over it. It takes guts to do something like that. The confidence to say what we want to say is what makes us so successful in life, and if you never try, you'll always regret. PSS. What I meant to say was, live hard and get laid. You're a man, for Christ's sakes. Jeez. Well, see, there's the razzing at the end there, so...
But I knew it was coming.
Yeah. You can't just give me an honest answer and let me off the hook that easy.
I got an interesting question for you, though.
Okay.
What comes after PSS? Is it another S?
I would assume so. I don't know how many... Well, PS is postscript, so would it be postscript script, or would it be postscript postscript?
I don't know.
Because if you go PS, would it go PSS, or would it go PSPS?
I don't know. I just had that random thought. You know, one of them. I've never gone beyond that. You know, it's like, what's after infinity?
I imagine you just keep adding on S's. I don't know what the grammatical answer is there, but that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, and when you were reading that email, I was having flashbacks to like school, you know, where you had to write like research papers. That's what it sounds like.
And now you have to look up all the footnotes and whatnot.
Or like a book report. Did it come with a bibliography by
No, it didn't. He didn't cite his sources.
Oh, geez. I don't know.
This could all be plagiarism. We don't even know.
Yeah, it could be an article out there on the internet.
Well, do you have an answer for the question? Your favorite original movie villain?
I have two.
Okay.
Even
though you want to break the rules again, cheater.
Yeah, I am a rule breaker.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, I'm a huge Denzel fan.
Okay.
and Denzel always plays the good guy.
True.
Until he flipped it and played a bad guy in Training Day.
His best role, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I would say one of his best.
Yeah.
And I just loved the way he portrayed a villain. I mean, he showed off that he could just be ruthless, cruel, just not give a damn about anything other than himself.
Yeah, he did a really good job. And I think I liked it for that same reason, too, is that it was something finally. He was one of those actors that was kind of doing the same thing over and over, but then when he flipped it around and did Training Day, really great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just was ruthless. Dirty, dirty dog. And then, like, here's another sidebar. He's one of the few villains that you actually feel bad for at the end.
And I think all the best villains do have that.
This is true.
You need to be able to identify with them just a little bit in order to really appreciate them.
Yeah, and what is their motivation to be such a villain?
Right, because a true villain isn't just evil. Well, I mean, some of them are, but the best villains are the ones who think that they're not villains. They're just doing what they're doing for whatever reason.
Yeah, just because they might have been down on their luck. You know, you just never know.
So that's someone, one. You said you had two, right?
Yeah, or someone could have cut off their Twitter.
That's very possible, too. They could be missing tweets.
Yeah, I think that's just going to be a running joke of this episode.
I think it already is.
My second one would have to be, and I looked it up, you know, prior to the show, and I did not know that Kevin Spacey's character did not have a name in Seven.
Yeah, he didn't.
So when I looked it up on IMDb, he was just known as John Doe.
Yep.
And the reason why I appreciate Kevin Spacey's role in that movie is just the way that he played the serial killer and went, like, was so precise in his methods of madness when he was killing people based on the seven deadly sins. It was just crazy.
And Spacey himself did so much with so little screen time in that movie.
Yeah, and you know what else I appreciated about that movie that I wish more movies would do? Is, I don't think Kevin Spacey's name was in the opening credits.
Well, I don't think he was a name at that point either. I think Seven was really his big breakout role.
I gotcha.
But yeah, I know what you mean. It left the mystery there, which was nice.
Yeah, because, you know, if you had seen Kevin Spacey in whatever minuscule roles he was in prior, you know, and you saw that, okay, just through process of elimination, you see that, you know, oh, well, okay, we know that's Brad Pitt, so we know he's good.
Sure.
You know, we know that's Morgan Freeman, so we know he's good, too. But wait, who's that one guy, that Kevin Spacey guy? Oh, he must be the bad guy.
Right. Well, even going back now that he is popular and everyone knows who he is, if someone was watching that for the first time and didn't know he was in it, then it would play off like you're saying it would. So
exactly.
That's cool. And I actually think maybe they should do that from movies from now on. Like, why have the opening credits? I don't need to know who's in it at the beginning.
No, I would agree. And I think for, like, whodunit movies,
yep,
they should definitely do that.
It's the same way with TV shows. I hate it when they tell me who the guest stars are going to be, because now I'm expecting that character if I've seen them before.
Oh, yeah, especially, like, on crime shows or like shows like Dexter or something.
Yeah,
like
it was
that.
A big deal on Lost when half of the show was like mystery and you don't know who's showing up.
Yeah.
And then you could say, oh, so-and-so's name is in the credits, so now I know who's going to... Especially like during the series finale, we weren't sure necessarily who was coming back, but we knew when the names were all listed at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, I think it's just there for the actors' egos.
Yeah. Let's see. My favorite original movie villain, and it's... I guess it's kind of an obscure one. I always really liked Simon Phoenix, as played by Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because I freaking loved him in that role.
He's amazing in it.
I mean, the way they bring his martial arts, his humor, and his acting. I mean, it was just the perfect role for him. Now, the blonde hair, still questionable.
I think it worked for the universe it was in.
Yeah, most definitely. What was it about Wesley Snipes' character that you like so much?
I think the main thing that I really liked about it is because I've always really liked the character of the Joker. And before Heath Ledger's amazing portrayal of him, Snipes as Simon Phoenix was probably the most live action translation of what the Joker might be like as a person in our world. Because he's really funny, but the things that amuse him are very dark.
Yeah.
And he's one of those laugh in 1 second and put a bazooka in your face the next characters. And I love that insanity in a villain.
Oh, yeah. That's deep, Rob. That's deep.
Might be saying some bad things about me as a person.
And on that note, I got to go.
And we out.
No, that's a real good one. That's a real good one.
Love the character. So I'm going to put out this week's poll question. I still have been debating whether or not I'm going to keep doing these, but they tend to just kind of follow the top three and give the audience a chance to ring in because you might not have mentioned a game that they really wanted to. So I will ask the audience, what is your favorite old school NES game? You can send your response to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. And with that, we're going to go right into news.
News time.
Top news story this week. Underworld 4 gets a release date. It's also being referred to as Underworld 3D, which upsets me a little bit, because I don't want to see an Underworld 3D movie. It's also rumored that Kate Beckinsale will make a short return to pass the torch to one of her two vampiric daughters, so apparently she has kids now. It is scheduled for a release of January 20th, 2012. Which keeps it on par with the last two Underworld movies that released around the same time. The only reason I remember that is because my birthday is the 21st. So one of them actually came out on my birthday before.
Yeah.
Let's see. Warner Brothers is planning a live-action Bugs Bunny movie. The movie is planned to be similar to the Yogi Bear and the Roger Rabbit in a live-action CGI hybrid idea type thing. The Looney Tunes were last seen on the big screen in 1996's Space Jam and 2003's Looney Tunes Back in Action. Warner Brothers has also produced three animated Looney Tunes shorts. The first was shown before Cats and Dogs 2, while the others will be seen prior to Legend of the Guardians and Yogi Bear, respectively. Any thoughts on a live-action Bugs Bunny?
I would check it out because growing up, I was a huge fan of Looney Tunes, and Dave Botts and I often talked about, you know, while we were at college at roommates, as roommates.
Yep. You guys roomed together in college?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep.
That's funny. Let's see how many more North Attleboro people we can name drop in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna listen once you mention their name.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, back in the day, we used to consider like having Looney Tunes movie day where we would spend like a Saturday or a Sunday, just watching all like the full length Looney Tune movies.
Nice.
But the caveat was we were going to try to find pajamas that had the feetsies or footsies and the trap door in the back.
Oh, you got to have the trap door, right?
Exactly.
Why the hell was I not hanging out with you guys in college? What the hell?
Where did you end up going again?
I went to UMass Dartmouth.
Ah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Although, yeah, you know what? I went for teaching eventually. I should have probably just gone to Bridgewater and just cut out the whole process.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been a lot cheaper.
Yeah, probably. But who knew what the hell I wanted to do at the time. Anyway.
Same. What are your thoughts on a full length?
I'm down with it. I'm a little scared because they seem to really corny these movies up. The live action and the CGI mixes, like Yogi Bear, I'll see, but it looks really, really corny. If they keep with the classic humor of Looney Tunes, it might be okay, but they make it so non-violent, or I should say non-slapstick, because it's never really like violent. It's not realistic violence. So I don't know. If they approach it the right way, it might be all right. But if they don't, it's going to be terrible.
Another question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You ever, as an adult, go back and watch those old Looney Tunes cartoons?
Oh, sure. They're still funny.
Do you realize how racist some of those things were.
Well, look at when they were made.
No, I know. But as kids, you're oblivious to that stuff. It's just like one of those, you know, like when you watch a movie that you loved as a kid.
Sure.
And you're just like, whoa, I didn't recognize that they were just being blatantly edgy or racy.
Oh, yeah. They're racist. They're sexist. They're everything. But that's one of the reasons they're so funny.
Exactly. So I guess to your point, you know, if they kept that edginess, you know, subconscious raciness, I think it would be a good movie.
Yeah, I can't imagine them going that way, though. I think it's just going to end up being totally watered down, which is too bad.
Yeah, kind of like Heathcliff or whatever, that Garfield, I'm sorry.
Yeah, ugh. Garfield's one of my favorite characters ever, and they totally, ugh. Anyway, let's see, Lost.
Rob just threw up in his mouth.
Yeah, a little bit. I threw up a little in my butt, too. Lost actors, Michael Emerson and Terry O'Quinn, who, for the unaware, that would be Ben Linus and John Locke from the show, are looking for a TV project together. Emerson says they both want something more lighthearted than Lost. He hopes the show can encourage their age and frailty. Emerson says he envisions a show where, if their characters get hit in the face, they, quote, don't get up for a month. Did you watch Lost at all?
You know, Lost is one of those TV shows that I probably will never watch a single episode.
That's too bad, because it is really good.
Yeah, you know, I just, from all my friends that have watched it, you know, they have up and down moments where like, oh, Lost is the greatest thing since sliced bread, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, you talk to them the next season, I'm freaking done watching Lost. They just are all over the place. And then it seems to go like in cycles.
It did kind of go up and down, but it had to be really, really good for people to get that upset about it when it did drop a little.
Yeah, I don't know. if Christopher Nolan did Lost, I probably would have watched it.
It's always back to Nolan, isn't it? Speaking of man crushes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right back at you. All right. Telltale Games teases an all-star mashup game of their featured characters. They released a trailer recently where you could see silhouettes of different characters. The ones that were represented in the trailer are from Penny Arcade, Sam & Max, Team Fortress, and Strong Bad Games. Tycho, who is one of the characters from Penny Arcade, they haven't said exactly what this game's going to be yet, but Tycho and the guy from Team Fortress appear to be holding what looks like hands of cards in their silhouettes. The official announcement on what this game is going to be is supposed to be released on Thursday, September 2nd at PAX Prime. So by the time that this episode's actually out, people might already know, but that's my speculation. So I don't know. Have you played any of those?
No, I haven't played any of those games before.
Yeah, well, they're fun. I'm a big fan of Sam & Max and Strong Bad, especially.
I've seen Sam & Max, and, you know, I was inclined to play it, but just never got around to it. But I'm going to speculate that, you know, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, maybe it'll be a 2D side-scrolling fighting game.
That would be amazing. I would
like
love
the
that.
Simpsons?
Oh, that arcade game. That was way more fun than it should have been.
Yeah.
They don't make...
And I'm a little disappointed... it never came out on any console.
They, I think, might have released a ported copy. But see, the thing is, whenever they released a lot of those cabinet games and they put them onto consoles, a lot of them ended up sucking. Like, Captain America and the Avengers was an awesome arcade game, but the console version was terrible.
Yeah, I guess it's all just contingent upon, like, graphics and what's available to those systems at the time, you know?
Yeah, well, if you can bring it over with the same quality and the same play control, the Captain America suffered from just really clunky controls. The game was still virtually the same, but it was just so clunky that it wasn't fun anymore.
Is that the game where you could be like, was it Hawkeye and
the Vision? And yeah, great game.
Yes.
Let's see, last news story I have. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game.
that's news?
Yeah, this is news. There are some codes to unlock both boss rush mode and a blood code. Boss Rush Code was released on a blog of one of Ubisoft's artists. On PSN, you can enter right circle R1, right circle R1. On Xbox version, enter right BR1, right BR1. Now, the blood code is interesting for multiple reasons. It's not a true blood code because the game is very comedic. So their version of blood is normally when you hit someone, there's like a hit spark. The blood code replaces that hit spark with a pink heart-shaped splash, and that's their version of blood. The other funny thing about it is that it copies the blood code, or I think it's a blood code or something like that, from Mortal Kombat. There was that old code, the Abacab. So they kind of repeated that similar button sequence, but they had to replace a certain, but like the Xbox one is ABA XABB. So they just put the X instead of the C. On PlayStation, it's X circle, X square, X circle, circle. So it's that same Abacab idea, which I think is funny. It's a good reference. The only thing that would have been awesome is if they had some version of the Konami code do something.
Yeah, up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start.
Hell yeah. Most people don't say the select start in it, but I appreciate that you do.
Yeah, you know, even though it wasn't really necessary.
It was still part of the sequence.
Yes, it was. People made it needed to make it a part of it, so.
That's right.
So let me ask you another random question. Okay. What do you think the thought process is behind labeling the buttons?
What do you mean?
Like, why isn't it just straight A, B, C, D, you know, and then, you know, E or whatever? You know, why is it that, like, on PlayStation, they decided to use shapes,
mm-hmm.
and Xbox decided to use letters?
Gotcha.
What do you think? You think it's just, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out what their thought process might have been.
Being someone who's dabbled in graphic design and packaging and marketing and stuff like that, I would guess that it's more console identity than anything, because it separates those controllers even more visually in your mind. It's less translatable between the consoles. Like, clearly I just had to give different codes for different systems because their buttons just are not the same. So people become familiar and comfortable with one set of buttons. And it's a branding and a marketing thing too, because you see PlayStation has really used their face buttons, the X circle, square, triangle, and they've trademarked that pattern and that arrangement so that it's actually a version of an extension of their brand.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I know they do incorporate that into their logos and stuff, right?
Yeah. I have a shirt that just has like all four logos in a row, and there's a little TM after, and I was like, damn, they actually trademarked that sequence of shapes. It's crazy.
So yeah, I guess when you put it that way, as a marketing scheme and a way to distinguish yourself from other consoles, yeah, I guess that would make sense.
Yeah. That's the end of my news. You said during the break that you had some news from the Apple announcements. I wasn't even aware they were coming out today. And since I basically ran home, pulled up my notes, and we started recording this thing, I haven't had a chance to look at the news feed. So if you have any of that you'd like to share, feel free.
Yeah, no, not a problem. I guess first piece of news that they released is the new iPod Touch.
This I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I mean, if you are familiar with the iPod Touch, it's just basically the same elements as the iPhone, but without the phone piece.
Okay, but which is kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, but I think you'll like it because I guess one of the biggest draws for this is the FaceTime feature.
Oh, so they're carrying that front-facing camera over.
Correct.
Interesting.
So you can talk to people, I'm assuming, obviously, over a Wi-Fi connection.
So there must be a microphone, no?
I would have to take a look. I would assume so.
See, now this might be exactly what I'm looking for, because I've been holding off on getting a smartphone because I really don't use the phone feature that much anymore. It's everyone just wants to text, which I hate doing anyway. But I never wanted to, like, I use Skype for my phone at home, and I wanted to have an iPod or an iPhone because I know you can put Skype on it. And in my Wi-Fi at home, I could use it as a handheld phone along with my Skype account. I know you can't do it over the 3G, but I could do it around at home. Now, the iPod Touch, if it has the microphone and I download the Skype application, I could do that now and not have to pay monthly data plan. So that I'm very excited about.
Yeah. And
did they give, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off. Did they say what the space, the hard drive capacity is going to be on these?
Yes, they've got 8, 32, and 64.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah, the 8 goes for $229, 32, $299, and 64, $399.
Oof, that's hefty.
Yeah, that is very hefty.
All right, so maybe I'm holding off a little longer even.
But like I said, you know, a lot of the similarities between the iPhone 4 have carried over to the iPod Touch.
Cool.
The other thing is, you know, the Retina display.
Yep.
HD video recording.
Oh, really? That's very cool.
Yep. And obviously the increase in better gameplays.
Yep.
Or better gaming experiences. So
there were rumors of the updated iPod Touch having some sort of a 3G possibility. Anything about that?
Did not see anything mentioned about that.
Okay, just curious. It's possible there's nothing involving it. I don't even know why they would really go that route.
It could be on the horizon. I mean, they could almost have the same setup as the iPad, where, you know, you pay as you see that you want it. So
right. It would also be a way to get around the exclusivity contract between AT&T and the iPhone, because technically it's not an iPhone. Maybe they could release that on Verizon's 3G.
Correct. I guess maybe that's the reason why it probably won't happen anytime soon, because Apple would flip their whatever.
Gourd. Lid.
Yeah. There you go.
Pick various blank fillers. Any other big Apple news?
Yes. In addition to the Touch, they also released a new iPod Nano with a touch interface.
Hmm.
And they look very tiny, square shaped.
Similar size probably to the older ones?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember what the older ones looked like. But yeah, these are like, they almost look like maybe 4x4, just square.
That's a little
size.
Bigger, actually, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to look at the specs, but yeah, I guess it's got like the whole new touch screen. I'm trying to see what else they have here. Oh, I guess it is smaller and lighter. So yeah, they have like a picture of a guy like doing like the sign of the beast.
Yep.
But the two fingers in the middle and the thumb are like holding it.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's tiny.
Hmm. Yeah, I never really cared about nanos, honestly.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of like very high capacity iPods.
Sure. Yeah, I don't want something that's going to hold like 4 gigs or.
Exactly. That's why I don't put a lot of music on my iPhone.
I'm still very happy with my 80 gigabyte iPod Classic.
That's what I have as well.
Yeah.
It's the boom diggy.
And it's a lot friggin' cheaper than a Touch, I'll tell you that much.
Yes, yes. And two more announcements from Apple.
Okay.
iTunes 10.
Cool.
I guess the biggest thing that they're pushing there is a feature called Ping.
Hmm.
And it just allows you, it's like social networking for music.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, you can follow artists and friends, check out the profiles and recent activity.
I don't know if there's another, I want to be checking another friggin' thing.
Yeah, right. I guess if you're there downloading stuff, you know, it doesn't hurt to take a peek.
Although I wonder if it would help with people seeing podcasts, maybe.
That would be cool.
That'd be very cool. I may have to look into that.
Yes, they would. They need to, you know, support and listen to their podcasting community.
Agreed.
You know, I think that, you know, one of the biggest things, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, is they need to have a statistic package.
Totally. Yeah, there's no way to track. It's all third-party tracking systems.
Yeah, one of the things that I did like about the company that we use for our show, the Black and Perf show, which is kind of in limbo right now, is Libsyn, which stands for Liberated Syndication. They just updated and upgraded all their stuff.
Cool.
Even to the point where you can have an app.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out, Rob, for sure.
I know it's only like $12 a month.
Yeah, and their statistics package is just is crazy. It's good.
Maybe I'll look into that when I'm actually making money off of the show.
There you go. There you go. And it makes it easy to post all your stuff because it pretty much does it for you.
Nice.
And then the last announcement is the new Apple TV, which I'm still kind of lukewarm about because I think as far as home media is concerned, Apple really hasn't focused on that.
No, it's kind of an afterthought, or at least it feels like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they just feel that they've got other things, more important things to focus on.
Right.
But apparently the new Apple TV is it's smaller in size, and I think it just streams movies, TV shows, do music, photos, and whatnot. I think you can only rent movies on it, but I guess one of the biggest draws for it is the price, that they dropped it to $99. So
see, now that I was out of it for most of that until you said the price point, which is not bad at all. That's actually really good.
Yeah, I mean, and it, you know, you can still keep your Netflix account on it. You know, I if I needed to cut my cable, I probably would go ahead and buy an Apple TV.
Yeah, it's really cool, I think, for especially for people who are not high-end computer users and just want something simple to use. I mean, I have a setup where I right now my computer, my PS3, and a media sharing network hard drive all accomplish the same thing and much easier or much better than the Apple TV would do it. But for someone who's not going to be as geeky as me and make this crazy setup, that could certainly be appealing.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Now, do you have, like, the Western Digital setup?
I do. I have a Western Digital World Edition media streaming hard drive, like a 1 terabyte one. And then I have my PC and I have my PS3. And that hard drive streams it to both my computer and my PS3, which goes to my TV. So anything I want, I throw on there. I can rip all my DVDs, throw them right on the hard drive, so I don't even have to use the physical discs if I don't want to. Any shows that are online, I can put on there and watch like that. So I don't even have cable. It's not worth my time.
That's cool. Yeah. Oh, and the other thing that I forgot to mention is I guess you can rent thousands of HD movies starting at $3.99.
Eh.
And the other thing is, you can rent TV shows for 99 cents per episode.
That's a little more interesting. I could see doing that as opposed to actually paying for cable, because honestly, it'd probably be cheaper for me to do that than buying cable.
Yeah, you just rent, you know, a season or whatever and just knock it out that way.
That's cool. I really like that idea.
Yeah, and that's all from the Apple world. I mean, if you want to learn more, listeners at home, just check out apple.com if you haven't already.
Sweet dilly. Well, at this point, we're going to take another quick commercial break, and then we're coming right back into the spoiler room for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which I'm so excited about. Man crush. Yeah, let's not say man crush anymore. Even that word sounds gay. I don't like that.
You just put no homo at the end of it.
Man crush, no homo. All right, so we'll be back right after this.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris, your host for Geek Tech Live, the biweekly podcast that showcases tech news, reviews of consumer products and games, and I even get to talk to some of the movers and shakers in the world of geekdom. Occasionally, I even throw in a rant or two. So drop on by to geektechlive.com. See you there.
Hello, world. This is Todd from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
We are back, and we are just about to step into the spoiler room for the second time only on this show to say again and remind the fans of just exactly what the spoiler room is. There are a lot of shows I listen to and a lot of articles I read where people give their reviews of movies, but as someone who comes out of the movie and has just seen it, all I want to do is talk to my friends about it. So we created the spoiler room as a segment where we can walk into it. We've warned you that we're going to be revealing a lot of things from the movie, and we're just going to have a conversation about it. Spoilers are going to come out. We potentially could ruin the movie if there was anything that could be ruined if you haven't seen it yet, but it is a free-for-all forum where we can talk about the movie and discuss anything within it as a whole. So with that said, I think it's time for me to punch in my special code here and step right into the spoiler room.
Access granted. Welcome.
Now that we are situated, and again, I apologize, it's a little muggy and tight and squeezy in here.
Yeah, why am I sitting on the floor? Where's your furniture?
I'm still in the process of moving. We just got to kind of rough it this time. You got to bear with me.
All right.
And again, budget issues. All these things are whatever.
It's the damn economy.
It is the economy. I can't even build a spoiler-free vault or whatever. All right. I'll start off with my comments of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World by simply saying that I absolutely loved this movie. In my review on the site, I gave it a 5 out of 5. There are so many things in this movie that I identify personally with, and I'll get into that a little bit more as we go on. But what was your initial take, Weathers, on the movie itself?
Okay. I enjoyed it. Obviously not as much as you did.
Yeah.
But I think if you come into the movie and you want to be visually amazed and want to see something new and refreshing,
mm-hmm.
I think you'll walk away enjoying that movie. Now, you know, I like movies of all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
So I can appreciate Scott Pilgrim doing or leaving Scott Pilgrim knowing that I can't compare it to another movie, you know, as far as the visual effects and the editing for, you know, another good reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very unique.
Oh, yeah. Very unique, to put it in the least amount of words. On the other side, you know, I am a big guy on dialogue.
Okay.
And, you know, whether it be witty, cheeky, whatever, I just didn't really get that from Scott Pilgrim.
Really?
Yes, it was witty at times, but I think that was one of the downsides of having Michael Cera as the lead role, just because I think Kieran Culkin was probably the wittiest out of all of them.
Hilarious in this movie, which shocked me, but yeah, very but pleasantly shocked.
Yeah, I knew he had that in him. But Michael Cera, like when he would try to say something funny or, you know, it was just so, so dry.
I think Michael Cera has kind of overstayed his welcome in Hollywood, which is too bad because I did read an article on part of the marketing strategy for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and there was a reason that they used the movie poster they did. You see him playing the bass guitar in his head. He's like in mid-headbang, and you can't see his face because they didn't want to advertise the fact that Michael Cera was starring in this movie.
Which makes sense. I mean, you know, I just started watching Arrested Development and did not realize that Michael Cera was in that. But, yeah, I could see the transformation. I mean, he really hasn't strayed much from his acting style.
No, not at all.
And I think that's what killed, you know, some of my enjoyment and excitement for the movie.
It's too bad. Because I absolutely loved it. It was very hard for me to sit in the theater. I went again for a second time last night, and this is the first time I attempted writing notes while I was watching the movie. And yes, I still enjoyed it and had time to write notes, but the chicken scratches that I did write in the dimly lit theater, I did rewrite in my Word document, and I'll go over some of the notes right now. The most outstanding part of the movie in my mind were the very clever, quick transitions.
Oh, yeah. Like, there wasn't any... I mean, it was seamless, just to put it that way. It was seamless.
It was. Some people might have thought it was like an ADD movie, because at one point he's here talking about one thing. The next moment he's walking towards the party. Like, how did he get there? But it doesn't matter, because the plot's moving along and it's not hurting anything while it's doing it.
No, and most of Americans today have ADD anyways and have short attention spans to begin with. So.
Right, and it contributed to the humor, the way that they were doing that. Like, where are we going again? Oh, this party's going to suck. This party sucks. Like, it was. I loved that.
Yeah, it was. And that's what kind of made it very comic booky.
Yeah, absolutely. The use of the familiar video game sounds that brings up nostalgia for all of us. And their references to pop culture, like the Seinfeld music playing as he walks into his apartment, and they have all the canned laughter for just that small segment. That was really funny to me.
That was clever too. I enjoyed that part. I'm trying to remember the other part that was like that. It just, I guess I just have been removed a little bit from it. I saw it 2 weeks ago.
I'm starting to think that by the end of this, discussion, I might sway you to see it again and change your whole take on the movie.
You know what? I think you guys touched upon it on episode 8.
Yep.
I can see this being an underground DVD classic.
Yeah, that people are going to rewatch. And maybe it is that like that for you, because there's a lot of movies that you do watch through, and there were so many small little things in this that went by so fast that you might not notice it. Like, there's one part where Knives is in the clothing store and Scott's sitting on a couch, like in his whatever mode. And he's sitting on a couch with a sign that says, do not sit. And it's just a quick little small joke like that. But it was funny to me.
Yeah. You know what, though? Here's another thing that may prevent it from being such a cult classic. And I didn't even think about it until now. Quotables. This movie doesn't really have too many requotable lines.
True. Yeah, a lot of the things are situational based, and they really have to be in the context of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, movies like Office Space, you know, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yep.
Those movies didn't really do so well in the theaters, but when they came out on DVD, everybody was quoting their lines.
There are, I think, well, the only really quotable character in the movie would probably be Chris Evans. He was awesome.
Oh yeah, he's always good for a quote or two.
Yeah, just the voice he was putting on and the attitude was hysterical.
Yeah, I mean, that's his character. I mean, nobody plays that better than him.
Absolutely.
I especially loved him in Not Another Teen Movie.
Great. And that was his really big breakout role.
Yes, it was.
To talk about Ramona Flowers for a minute, who was played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. First of all, which hair color did you prefer? Pink, blue, green?
I was partial to blue.
Really? I was a pink fan myself.
Oh, see, I knew you. See?
What do you mean, see? No, I'm talking about a woman here. I can talk about pink and a woman.
Okay, Rob. Oh, pink and a woman.
Whoa, all right. Anyway, even though she was kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. She wasn't like the most happy person character. There was something about her character that I found incredibly sexy, because I just always dug the punk rock style. And she had, there are two weaknesses that I have that if girls have these things, then just like makes me melt. And the one that she had like a black cord choker, like necklace. For whatever reason, that is like an Achilles heel to me.
Mm.
And I don't know why.
Maybe it's because you like S&M. I don't know.
I told you not to bring that up.
I'm sorry. I just can't help it. It's
do we have to talk about our past relationships that much? I mean,
No. Let's not bring it up.
Okay, let's drop it right now before it escalates. So yeah, that's just like one of the two weaknesses. Boom.
What was the other?
The other? She didn't have it in this movie, but the other like weakness I have is if a girl has like a curled upper lip, some might call it like a mousy look.
Or like a pouty.
I guess. I don't even know if I'd call it pouty because that's like puckered.
Mm.
But like, I don't know, just like a slightly curled. Like, who is that girl? Is this movie coming out? What is it? Charlie St. Cloud?
Oh, yeah.
The female lead in that movie has like the upper curled lip. And she has like a mousy mouth where you can like see her top teeth. And that, for whatever reason, that's so hot to me.
Hmm.
I don't know.
That's interesting, Rob. Good luck finding a woman with both of those.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, at least one of them is something that anyone could just put on. So
yeah, this is true.
I really just need to find the one and ask for the other. One of the things I liked in the movie was how they blatantly pointed out some of its own ridiculous elements. Like the first battle with one of Ramona's exes with Matthew Patel, he starts singing and getting into this whole like musical thing. And Stacey Pilgrim, played wonderfully by Anna Kendrick, just goes like, what? Like, he's going to start singing? What is that?
I kind of liked the little Slumdog Millionaire break that he put it to it.
Let's go Bollywood all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. A little Jai Ho.
And the same thing happened when Julie's in the coffee shop and she keeps swearing and you see the black bar and the bleep going on. And Scott asks her how she's doing that, quote, thing with her mouth. Like, how you doing that? And I think that was one of those like little throwaway things that not many people noticed, because she's just going like beep 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 and the box is popping up and he's like, how are you doing that thing with your mouth? But she just keeps going.
I tell you one thing that I liked, you know, just from the humor standpoint,
yeah,
was Kieran Culkin's ability to text what's going on even when he's sleeping.
That was awesome. She would just call up, ring, ring.
Yeah, because there are people that I know that are just, they're like Houdini when it comes to texting.
Yeah, one second he's sleeping, the next one he's sleeping with the phone in his hand. How did you do that? The action in this movie, I found to be incredibly visceral and like very satisfying. A lot of action movies, they're greatly choreographed scenes, but they don't feel like hard hitting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think the action sequences definitely saved the movie for me.
Yep.
Until I realized, you know, the part of me was noticing that, you know, Michael Cera obviously wasn't in a lot of the sequences.
Actually, he was in more than you'd think he would be.
Yeah, no, that's true. There were, yeah, for it being Michael Cera, he was in a lot more than I thought.
Yeah. But particularly the two parts where Scott Pilgrim has the sword at Gideon's club and he's hitting all the henchmen and just like boom, boom, boom. That felt cool. And when all of Chris Evans' stunt doubles are hitting him with the skateboard and everything, I don't know. It just felt powerful. Like it felt like they were hitting.
Yeah, it was crazy. That scene reminded me of like the Matrix scene with all the Mr. Smith.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was almost a play on that.
Yeah, I think it was, too. The other thing that I liked about the action sequences is the incorporation of the music to it.
Definitely.
I think that was huge because, like, especially the... And I'll even go into a little sidebar, especially the Battle of the Band scene with the twins.
Oh, I wanted to talk about that, too, because I loved that scene.
Okay, well, I'll let you go.
Go ahead.
No, I enjoyed it because, especially when, you know, the animals started to come out.
Exactly.
It just reminded me of Mortal Kombat where you had, like, bestialities.
Yep.
And so that kind of brought me back. And it was visually cool. I mean, I can't stress that enough.
The reason I really like that scene mainly is because there are so many action movies where you have like a weakly perceived hero like Scott Pilgrim, and the villain comes in with this ginormous way of fighting you, like the two dragons were. Then the hero's response to win that battle is always something like stupid and little, like he does something like almost like with the battle with Roxy, and he pokes her in the back of the knee and she bursts. Like, that was kind of lame.
Yeah.
It's very rare to see a weakly perceived hero step up to the same level And it, you want him to, but rarely do movies actually go there. But when he created the monster, the green-eyed monster, and the, he took the two heads and like smashed them together, I was like, yeah!
I thought it was also cool how each, like you had mentioned, each opponent pretty much had like a weakness that he had to discover.
Yep.
I think it got a little, like you said, it got a little out of hand with that one chick with behind the knee.
Yep.
I think it got a little bit more out of hand with the vegan police.
That was hysterical.
I don't know. I found that kind of stupid.
Ah.
But it was interesting because one of the police officers was a well-known actor, and his name escapes me right now.
Thomas Jane.
That's right. Yeah.
Formerly the Punisher, and more recently in the HBO series Hung.
Yes.
Yes, I thought that was hysterical. The other guy is what was he? He was in Boondock Saints too. The Mexican guy in that movie.
Oh yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
And I don't know what the actor's name is, but I like that you brought. That was a great transition, unknowingly bringing up Thomas Jane, because I wrote down a few things that were just kind of random points that I. And one of them was like Thomas Jane as one of the vegan police out of nowhere. The part when Roxy goes to fight Scott and goes to kick, and Ramona just like is standing in that stance and has her foot, and the Verses pops up on screen. I was just like, oh, that's so cool.
I like how they did that. I mean, like I said, the editing on this was just brilliant because, you know, the transitions for one, and then just being able to bring out like those inner user screens, like,
yep,
like Mortal Kombat fight or
yeah, you know, and KO.
Yeah, that was cool.
So awesome. How many takes were needed for Mary Elizabeth Winstead to correctly say all those T names in a row?
Oh, jeez. I have no... I'd probably say, like, at least 20.
Right. That was... As soon as I saw that, I was like, holy crap, how many takes did that take?
Yeah.
Because that was nuts.
Yeah, the movie was good. I think, you know, for entertainment purpose, it's definitely worth seeing.
Roxy's Southern accent kept coming and going. The ninja chick, yeah. It was like all of a sudden huge Southern drawl, next line. What?
Yeah, it, you know, I kind of was taken away from, you know, most of the female characters, but I don't know, Knives did it for me.
Really?
Maybe it's the whole Asian thing.
Maybe.
I don't know. She just did it for me more so than the main character, female character.
See, there's a small movement on the internet that's almost like doing a Team Knives thing because they think Ramona's a bitch. And in my mind, she just seems so young that it was, I don't know, she seemed like a kid.
Hmm.
You pedophile.
Not a kid.
I know she's not, but I don't know. Something about her just was made me like, oh, she's a kid. That's weird. Not to make you feel too creepy.
It's just like all these older chicks that are all about freaking Taylor Lautner. So
that's true. Yeah, I know. All the, what do they call them? The Twilight Mothers or the Twi Moms or something like that.
Yeah. So it's perfectly okay for an older woman to drool over a underage guy, but when a guy drools over an underage woman, girl, it's not acceptable. I don't like double standards.
All right, point taken. All right, this brings me to the message of the movie itself. Now, this is the reason I really, really like the movie as much as I did, not only from all the other things I've said, but the movie is basically a metaphor for a relationship where at least one of the people involved has a past that they're not very proud of, in this case, Ramona, and they bring that baggage into the current relationship. Now, Scott has to determine whether or not he's willing to make the effort to get through all that baggage to be with her. Gideon even says it when he says to Scott, quote, don't let what's past ruin your future. So that's pretty much like every battle that he's fighting is a metaphor for the baggage that Ramona has from her past relationships and now has to deal with those issues to be with a nice guy.
Yeah, it is a huge metaphor because I consider myself to be a nice guy and we definitely finish in last when it comes to relationships.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you almost do have to fight battles, whether it's exes or, you know, how exes treated the girl that you're interested in. So yeah, it is a huge metaphor, and I never really thought about it like that.
Yeah, I'm enlightening you.
Yes, you are. Teach me, oh wise one.
That's right. And Scott has this like incredibly exaggerated insecurity, but at the same time, it's one that I kind of identify with. Clearly not to those extremes, but in the past, I've been very guilty of taking a throwaway comment and taking it very personally. Like when they say that he has the shaggy hair and all of a sudden he throws on the hat out of nowhere. Or there's the part where he's like, oh, well, I don't do drugs. And Ramona says, like, I don't even remember what she says, but he's like, but if you do drugs, then I do all of them and I love them all. Like wanting to be that much of a pleaser. I've certainly been guilty of doing that. And so it made me identify with Scott and see what I used to be. And at the same time, Gideon Graves is kind of the representation of everything that's cool and trendy. And he, again, kind of states it blatantly to Scott, says, you're not cool enough for her, you're a nothing. And myself, I never ever felt cool enough to be with the person that I was in a relationship with. I always had major self-esteem issues, and it resulted in a fear that it could end at any given time, which is kind of what Scott's dealing with. So not only...
Sorry. Episode of Dr. Phil or something.
Well, yeah, I like to break things down like this. I know. I apologize if I get too serious with topics, but
that's okay. I'll lighten it up. Don't worry about it.
All right. But I mean, that's why I this movie was so personal to me, because I saw Scott Pilgrim as such an exaggeration of myself, and it becomes satisfying because he ultimately learns that he needs to accept who he is along with the mistakes that he's made. And he'll be able to let go. Once he does that, he'll be able to let go of all the insecurities and be on an equal level with Ramona and make their relationship work. So when it comes around to the end, they actually are together. And the ending, I was very afraid for a moment that he was going to end up with knives because they made it seem that way for a moment. And I've been told that the comic ends a little differently, but I haven't gone to read it yet, but I do plan on it. And it might have been a bit Hollywood, but as a hopeless romantic myself, I like the fact that Ramona and Scott ended up together, probably because it was almost like a wish for myself, because so many of the relationships that I have felt like so-and-so was with me because I could help them with their issues, and then they left me behind while they moved on to something else. That tends to be the reality for nice guys. We end up being a catch-all for baggage. And once all that baggage has been dumped and the girl moves on and has a happy life with somebody else, the guy is just left holding all this crap.
True.
So to see a guy fight so hard and actually do get the girl in the end, sure, a little bit Hollywood, but I like it. That's satisfying to me.
I gotcha. So now I know exactly why you like this movie so much.
Right. So, I mean, I can see how someone would not like it as much when they just looked at it as a movie for what it is and not really like go into it so much. But for me, it was very personal as well.
I gotcha. So, you know, should it have been Rob Veloise versus the world?
You're damn right it should have been. And Rob Veloise would have kicked way more ass than Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, obviously.
I wouldn't have needed any like vegan tricks. I would have just whooped that ass.
Of course.
So that's pretty much the end of my notes and all I have to say about the movie. But if the audience didn't get the hint, I friggin' loved it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed it. Now that I've had this conversation with you, I definitely can see why a person like yourself would enjoy it, you know, both on a personal and, you know, mental level.
You just didn't like it as much because you're such a ladies' man.
Oh, yeah, I'm dealing with my own ex-girlfriend issues as we speak, so.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that now. Dr. Phil's in.
Yeah, right? You know what? You should do a show on how Facebook ruins lives.
It was a Facebook thing?
Yeah.
That is bullcrap.
Yep.
Maybe we'll get into this at another time.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
All right. Probably not the best thing to put out on the internet after it was already on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Well, chances of her listening to the show are probably minuscule, but you never freaking know.
Yeah, that's true.
said I've already said too much.
I've said too much. Edit that out. Any closing thoughts on the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World discussion?
I think, just like any other movie, you know, go see it and formulate an opinion of your own.
Now, after we've had this conversation, would you consider watching it again?
I think I'd wait for the DVD.
Okay. Well, I think it's almost out of theaters at this point anyway, because it was really only playing at night times when I saw it last night. So you may have to.
Yeah. Or I could go catch it at one of like the $1.50 theaters or whatever.
There you go. Well, in that case, we'll start wrapping up. Coming up next week on the show, provided I do a recording next week and not wait 2 weeks, we are going into double digits as Scott Toomey returns to co-host episode number 10. Big milestone, I guess.
Oh, that's a huge milestone.
I love it. I'm also, here's another milestone. I'm working on getting together our first interview, which should be very cool. The person has already, I'm not going to say who it is yet. They've already agreed to be on the show. We're just working out a time to actually do the recording.
Hmm.
And it's probably no one you've heard of, but I think it'll be interesting anyway.
Well, obviously I'm not a big enough celebrity for you, Rob.
Well, you know what? To get the man behind the clouds on the Geek Generation, I'm feeling a little accomplished right now.
Yeah, and if you can continue to plug that blog, that'd be great.
Which one? Man Behind the Clouds?
Yeah, because Black Apparel is kind of gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
There might be a revival movement, but not anytime soon.
What you're telling me is that Black and Perv is still on a hiatus, but Man Behind the Clouds is a blog that is actively running right now.
Correct.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to double check that.
I got you. That wasn't a subtle way of plugging it.
Please. I would never stoop to such levels. Well, in that case, I was just about to ask you for your plug anyway. So what would you like to plug, sir?
That's kind of a loaded question.
Hey now.
No, definitely check out manbehindtheclouds.com. It's my old personal blog where I rant about random things, do reviews myself.
Sweet.
So yeah, check that out. Yeah, that's all I gotta say right now.
Groovy. Well then, if you like the show, audience, I ask you to once again please tell your friends about it, spread the word. If you would like to visit the site, you can go to www.thegeekgeneration.com. You can find all the articles we talked about in the news, amongst many other things. There is a button on the site to subscribe in iTunes. While you are there, please rate the show and write a review. It helps increase our visibility in the iTunes store. There's also a donate button if you'd like to shell out some money my way. I appreciate it. If you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you'd like us to discuss on a future show, you can send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to this show, you can send that to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So thank you very much, Man Behind the Clouds, Mr. Weatherman, for joining me for this wonderful episode.
It was my pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Always a good time. It'll be nice to come back in the future, I hope. I hope I haven't scared you away right away.
No, and just kind of a last minute thing, I might actually end up living in your neck of the woods, so.
That would be fantastic. I'd love to have you in studio once I get those capabilities up.
There you go.
Fantastic. Well, in that case, we will see you next time.